Go.
Hi, you're listening to Out of the Canon. I'm Jeff Glees.
And I'm Adam Richmond.
Welcome, welcome. Nice, speedy intro. That's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, get it over and done with. How's it going, Jeffrey?
Very well. Nice to be here. Sorry there's been a little break. We have very busy, important lives, but we're back with you. We've missed you. We hope you've missed us. I know you have.
I am full to the brim of film chat. I'm raring to go.
Are you?
I'm okay. So excited. There's
something a bit worrying about that for me. I feel like I'm going to get a lot of abuse. This episode
depends if we disagree. We often do. You will.
Well, what are we talking about this week?
I thought we'd start off with using Spring Breakers as a launching pad for conversation.
Bringing off points, perhaps, if you will.
Yeah.
A conversation about what, pray?
Well, that'll be...
Oh, anything?
Maybe that'll naturally happen. Okay. I have something in my head that we could... It'll address some kind of listener concerns I've got with how we talk.
It's a surprise! That sounds intriguing. Okay.
I don't know whether to... Let's just talk... We'll just start talking about the film.
So this is an episode about Spring Breakers?
Not... Yes. Hopefully not just that.
That's what you said.
Okay. Well, I don't think it is, because I don't think it warrants one.
Okay,
hey,
well, fine,
spoiler
then.
Alert,
so it's, not
it's a
Spring
fucking
Breakers.
Piece of shit. But I think it's interesting. It'll raise interesting, you know,
okay,
film,
cool.
film topics.
Great. That's well, any admin to get through first, or...?
No, I don't
okay.
think so.
Cool.
We've got a few listener email things, but we'll come to those.
We'll do those another time, perhaps, or later.
Yeah. So Harmony Korine's Spring Breakers. Do we need to do a plot summary? It's just about four girls who go crazy and go on spring break and get into trouble.
I'd say it's been fairly well publicised, has it not?
Yeah.
A bit of buzz about it. Harmony Korine doesn't tend to make too many films, so when a new one comes out, there's always some buzz about it.
Yeah, it's been a while, I think. I think his last film was Trash Humpers.
Yes.
Which, have you seen that?
I haven't seen that one, actually, no.
It's supposed to be kind of almost unwatchable.
Uh-huh.
And I equate him with that more that type of movie, than something like this. What did you think of it?
I've just realised if we put an M in front of your name, it would be Madam. Sorry. What did I think of it? I liked it.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. This is going to be a good episode.
I don't know. I'm a big Harmony Korine fan, actually. I haven't seen Trash Humpers, and I'm sure, don't move or touch the microphone, I'm sure he has the capacity for making errors in what he does, but I haven't seen a film of his that I haven't liked, even ones like Kids and Ken Park that he didn't actually directly make, was just involved in. Spring Break is not his strongest effort, but definitely a strong flavour, I would call it.
Yeah, I would call it dull and laughable. There's no other words I had. I've said that many times to different people. I thought that as soon as Franco comes in, 50 minutes in, it picked up a bit.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
There was two very, very funny sequences in it. And I thought if the rest of the film had been as well written and as funny as those, it might have been worth something. But generally, you were forced to sit with some of the most awful, boring, vapid, idiot twats for an hour and a half.
Uh-huh.
And watch them act like idiots and like in the most... it was beautiful.
And that's just the audience.
Yeah.
Hey-o!
Yeah.
It really was in my case, though.
Oh,
there was
right.
like 30 people in the cinema having like a party.
Yeah.
Having a massive chat and about 50 people had to scream shush at them.
You see, and that
was depressing.
Yeah, so that's the kind
of
audience.
That's not the film's fault.
That's, well, I think partly is.
No.
No,
you do not blame a film for the people that go and see it.
That's who, those. That's the people who they've targeted to come and watch.
Really? You think so? You think that's who his target audience is?
I think it was a massive joke on his part. I think he's laughing his ass off. There are people talking about it really in hushed, reverential tones and intellectualizing it.
Who?
Oh, I don't know. You know, dickheads on the internet.
Mm.
Broadsheet.
Those guys.
Like, people have got the temerity to say it's sort of some sort of feminist tract. I just find it's a joke, because there's nothing feminist about women aping the worst of male excess in terms of aggression, braggadocio.
That is a good font, though.
I love that font. And, you know, kind of the attainment of you know, money and stuff isn't particular to the males, uh-huh. But it's... Why does that equal empowerment? I find that absolutely baffling. I don't think
that film had anything to do with feminism, though.
Well,
I don't think it was supposed to.
I beg to differ. I've got an email from a listener.
Oh yeah. Oh okay. Dropping it in, fantastic.
She begged me not to read it out in a funny voice, but let's see what happens.
Okay.
From Rebecca. Reasons why we argued about this. Reasons why I thought Spring Breakers was good from a feminist perspective. It passes the Bechdel test. You know what the Bechdel test is?
It's kind of like a white sauce that you can mix with cheese.
Yeah, it's there's a couple of rules whereby popularized by a comic book artist and writer called Alison Bechdel, and she talks about films where the film has to have at least two female characters,
uh-huh.
They have to share screen time and have a conversation, uh-huh. And they have to be talking about something other than their boyfriends.
Yes.
And that's it in
much
a nutshell.
Like Sex and the City. Wait a minute.
So yeah, apparently it passes it on that, which, but I mean, people have got problems with the Bechdel test, but it's kind of a nice broad stroke of a thing to kind of see if, I mean, it'd be nice if there should be more than two female characters in a film, and it would be nice if they actually spoke to each other and didn't refer to each other's, you know, relationships. Because,
yes.
I mean, that happens so
tends
much.
Tends to be, yeah.
Now, point number two. Allowed the girls to behave promiscuously and violently without repercussions, i.e. in a different film that hated women, they'd have died, not Alien and all the baddies.
Yeah, so in horror films, if a girl is promiscuous, she's had it. That's a
but
classic
that's
trope.
Such, yeah, that's so old. No, that trope isn't a trope anymore.
I think it still is, absolutely.
No. What was the last horror movie where that happened?
I don't know. What was the last horror film I saw?
You can't answer my question with a question.
Wolf Creek, that you made me watch. That's what happens in that. And
they weren't punished for being sexually promiscuous.
Yes, they bloody were. It's the whole thing starts off with them being like, I just want to get laid, or he really fancies you, let's go driving with him, he's handsome.
Oh, that's part of the character development, that's not part of...
Yeah, character. What character? There's no characters.
Yeah, I know.
And the loved ones as well. I don't think I've seen a horror film since those, actually.
Okay, who was punished? Yes, no one was punished. That's got a female villain.
She was well promiscuous, though.
Female villain.
She kissed her own daddy. Spoiler alert, sorry. I don't mean they actually do kiss.
I think the idea that allowing women to behave promiscuously and violently and then not punishing them with death, I don't see how that's a feminist thing. That's just having an unattractive character. And then when if men behave that way, they tend to be repercussions. Like film,
James Bond?
Yeah.
I mean, that stumped you.
Yeah, but he's a mainstream...
Exactly.
Idiot. And
these are the feminist issues, I think.
I don't see that as a... I don't know. I think there's lots of... Something that's more feminist would be something like Thelma and Louise, where they define their own... They act... They're strong characters, not by virtue of kind of copying how, you know, the worst of men behave.
Yes. But they still pay the price. Ultimately.
Yeah, they're punished for daring to try and question the patriarchy.
Uh-huh.
They always...
Well, they did kill a man. And that's never right, listeners.
They always appeared in control of their own actions and own decisions.
Uh-huh.
I disagree with that.
I agree with that.
The Christian friend, the one female character who basically has a trouble with, you know, the breaking of the law and having of the fun and the taking of the drugs and the drinking of the drink. Yeah. She is cast as this pious, boring, quivering Christian who is a massive crybaby, and when things get a little scary, she runs off home.
Uh-huh.
And that's the person who is not comfortable with it. And so the film is asked, we're asked to sort of laugh at this character, who's the strongest, she's got the strongest convictions of the lot.
I don't think we are supposed to laugh at her.
Well, her friends laugh at her.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that's what the director wants you to react to it as.
I think the way that
he doesn't want you to be the same as the main characters in the film. I didn't get that impression. I don't think it was glorifying them. It was just presenting them as characters to you.
The way it's shot, it does nothing but glorify them. The way
in what way?
Well, he shoots them longingly and lovingly, and they
really? They're so young. I didn't long for any of them.
No, he's longingly, as in like the camera is sort of eats them up.
The characters in the film.
Yeah,
yeah, but that's how you make a film, isn't it?
They're the protagonists for the film. Mm. They are. You're supposed to. I mean. The film is asking you to identify with them and go on with their journey, because it's a mainstream film, and it's asking you.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's not mainstream.
Of course it is.
No.
It's got a Skrillex soundtrack, whoever that is.
Yeah, I know, right.
The film's main relationship is the girl's friendship. It is not a particularly realistic depiction of female friendship. No shit. But the fact that female friendship is the main relationship is good in and of itself. That would be a good podcast film. Films based on friendship within that. Female friendship. It starts and ends with Thelma and Louise. That's all one point.
Right.
So basically, because a film is about female friendship, that's ipso facto a good thing. I beg to differ.
Well, I think, is it Rebecca?
Mm.
Thanks for writing in, Rebecca. Is her argument not that it's like, well, if you're going to look at this film from a feminist angle, there are actually arguments of why it's pro-feminist. That's all she's saying.
But it becomes meaningless, though, if you just start using the word feminist like that, doesn't it?
Well, no, she's backed up her points.
But what, the idea just that it shows a, like, women being friends isn't enough. Girls, the TV show, that's good because it's actually a nuanced and interesting take on female friendship.
Yeah.
This is no... They just sit around stroking each other's hair in Spring Breakers, looking at each other.
They do that a lot.
There's no characters. You don't know anything about them.
Yeah.
They could have just dropped from the planet Buckface.
Yeah.
So what... I don't know anything about what it is to be a young woman based on this film.
Oh, come on. No, I know, but
I'm not saying it wants me to know that, but don't tell me it's got a feminist fucking perspective.
See, I can't back this up, but I in no way got the impression that that film had anything to do with feminism whatsoever. I don't think that was what Harmony Korine was trying to.
But that's what I'm saying.
Think that it was made to seem like a feminist film. I think it was just about those particular characters that seemed interesting to the people that wanted to tell that story. And if you focus on the fact that it's women, or, you know, young women, girls, and say, well, right, that makes us have to consider feminism, I think that's playing into the trap of someone who actually, when they were making it, just went, my idea for a film are these four young girls who want to go on spring break.
Yeah.
It's like you're saying, why not boys, though? If it's boys, then we can just get past that. But the fact you've chosen girls means you have to account for your choice.
Well,
no, he doesn't.
Well, the thing is, you can't avoid the world he lives in. And he can't... It's the shots of young flesh and sexualising
women's
bodies. But we live in a world where women's bodies are sexualised. You can't go, well, that's not my fault. I just made my film. They just happen to be really sexy young girls.
There's just as many sexy young men in it as there are young women.
No, those two twins are ugly as fuck.
Well,
and then there's
James
Franco. He's very attractive, but they fill his mouth with gold. I mean, he gets his bottom out, you know, one for the ladies.
Yeah.
Well,
the main characters, as you say, are women. So, yeah, you probably see more of the female body. Although, at no point, spoiler alert, do any of the women take their clothes off in a gratuitous way. There's one scene.
Other women? Oh, no, they do. The one of the girls does. Takes her top off.
But you don't see anything, do you?
You see her boobs. The lads.
The actress who's his wife. Rachel Green. Yeah, all right.
They spurt their beer over her like it's kind of aping jizzing. And it's what it's just disgusting.
That's the point.
That sounded like my dad. It's disgusting.
Yeah, you sound like everyone's dad.
I found it all very boring.
I found it you found it boring.
I found it interesting that he could make all that titillation seem so dull.
It's not titillation.
No, exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like you're completely inured to this flesh. So
if you turn around and said to me, it's a really sexy film, isn't it? I'd be really worried about it. Yeah. Like, that would really piss me off if you just said that.
No, we're not.
It's not meant to be titillated.
Okay.
And I also think that if you live in America, a lot of that stuff would seem less shocking to us stuck-up, repressed Brits. Like, I think it's more par for the course over there that women do walk around in ridiculous bikinis stroking each other's hair. Like, if in LA, that's what happens.
What? But why are they? Why do they feel the need to, do what these idiots like want them to do? Get your tits out, love. It's the equivalent of
they want lads. To. They all every
they want.
Like
to.
I say, it's not just the girls. It depicts a culture where everyone is just being promiscuous and kind of idiotic and wanton. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, I did not get. I hate those people. So I hated
watching. But what makes you think Harmony Korine doesn't also hate them?
He doesn't. He said he loves them. He loves that world. He loves parts.
Yeah, but on what level, though? Some people, love kitsch things and crappy things, but not because they think they're good, because they're fascinated by their fucked upness. And I think Harmony Korine's a very artistically minded director. I think he's obviously...
Why has he made such a boring piece of shit, then?
Well, I don't think he has. I mean, I can understand that you were bored by it, but I didn't find it boring. I found it really, really fascinating.
What's with the repetition of the script? People's characters say the same line again and again, and the script is insipid as well. Yeah. I mean, is that just because people like that talk like that, or because it was a really boring script? You can't tell. Like, I'm not going to let you answer my question, but it's like if you're going to satirise boredom by being boring.
Well, I don't think it's meant to quite be satire either. I don't think that's what he does. I think Harmony Korine's films are kind of like dreams, really. They show you who the characters are fairly early on, typically, and then you just have to go with it, and you're not really allowed to take a kind of moral or intellectual stance on what's going on. You kind of just have to give yourself over to the story being told. And he's used that, in my opinion, I don't know if anyone listening would agree, but to best effect in the film Mr. Lonely, which is much more of a heartfelt piece. But still, you don't get much direct character building, and they're all a bit cracked, and they're all a bit almost mentally deficient in some way. Yeah, and the same in Gummo as well. It's the same kind of thing. Again, it's just...
Mr. Lonely's really good, but then... I was complaining about there's no story in Spring Breakers. There's no story in Mr. Lonely, but...
There is a story in Spring Breakers.
Barely.
And in Mr. Lonely.
No, well, not much of one, but you spend
I
more...
I think there is. And maybe it spends a long time getting there. I mean, if there's one criticism that I have of Spring Breakers is I think it could have been edited snappier. I will say that. I think they maybe took too long to tell their story. But only by a gnats, really. And there's a definite story. Anyone who hasn't seen it, well, you probably shouldn't be listening to this because we'll ruin it for you. But
no, well, don't worry. We haven't ruined it. Nothing happened. I wouldn't recommend anyone see it.
Stuff does happen. Don't think there's a definite plot. It just it has this weird jumping two steps forward, one step back sort of motif. It can be a bit much, but I just found it's so overwhelming. The kind of the first kind of 20 minutes, half an hour, is just. I mean, I found it really astonishing. Actually, like the colours are just way too high, and just everyone looks kind of monstrous, and the music's so loud, and it's just this barrage. And I felt kind of nauseous and anxious. Luckily, it kind of stabilises when you're into it, but it just presents this. bizarre, kind of surreal world, and it's something that personally I haven't seen before. And there was something kind of perversely fascinating about it that just made me want to keep watching. And then the fact that I was rewarded with, as you say, when James Franco turns up on the scene, his performance is so good, and like the especially the more humorous turns by him, just absolutely amazing. And then at one point also kind of gets a bit heartfelt, I thought. It's like you're rewarded for sticking in there with this thing that's kind of hard to watch and unpleasant.
No, I mean, I don't think they're rewarded by a funny scene, maybe.
No, it's more than one scene. It's several scenes.
It's two scenes. I'll give it two scenes with Franco. But I think the... I don't know, partly why I didn't think it was worth talking about, but why I thought it would be worth us actually talking about was just because of... it made me think about context and what you say and who knows you. So, for example, girls I know, women, who listen to us sometimes on this podcast,
yeah,
they say to me, when I listen to you... You sound, if I didn't know you, I'd think you were a bit sexist. And,
right.
You know, but then they say, oh, but because I know you, you're, I know you're kind of joking. So I was like, that kind of troubled me a bit because
I fucking did.
Well, I don't.
I can imagine you really lying awake at night, blood pouring out of your ears.
Not that bad.
I'm not sexist.
Well,
I've ruined everything.
I mean, in my head, I never was. Like, you know, you say...
I don't mean you're sexist.
You say a joke about finding a woman attractive, yeah. Jennifer Lawrence, and then laugh, and you go, oh, yeah, everyone knows I'm deliberately focusing on her being attractive rather than a better actress. But you have no control over... If people don't know me, how would they know I was making that joke? And so, if you didn't know that film was made by Harmony Korine, mm-hmm. how would you know the intention behind it? Isn't it just a beautifully shot?
Get it from the
girls
film.
On Girls Gone Wild. Really?
Yeah, it's not Girls Gone Wild. I don't know where you're seeing titillation in this.
No,
film.
No. Well,
it wasn't presented as titillation. What it reminded me of. Oh,
Girls Gone Wild is not titillating.
It reminded me of something. Yes, two things I've remembered. First thing it reminded me of was a TV show called Nathan Barley, which I'm sure everyone's bloody seen.
Yeah.
To me, it was very similar to what Nathan Barley was.
In his dreams. Well, carry on. It
was the same approach, is what I'm saying. And the other thing it reminded me of a lot from the beginning was American Psycho.
Oh, man. No way.
Yeah.
Fair play. That's what made you think.
It's a film about a bunch of characters, none of them you like. All of them seem scary and kind of surreal, but it's everything's heightened, everything's made to seem sexy, but it isn't. You don't buy that it's sexy. Everything, it's meant to be, but you can tell that it's also, you're meant to see through that and feel a bit just fucking disgusted by it, but yeah. Also fascinated by the story.
I will give it that point. I did.
Yeah. And I think it was that on purpose. I think that was explicitly... His attention, that intention, that's what the film gave to me. It didn't give me, look how cool this is, don't you wish you were here?
But that's
it
not
wasn't glorifying it.
No, I know, that's not my problem with it at all, and that's not enough. I think I will give it that, but at the same time, that's not enough. American Psycho is funny, funny and horrifying all the way through.
Uh-huh.
Nathan Barley is funny all the way through.
Yeah. Well, they're both those things are better than Spring Breakers
is funny twice.
I don't think so. But I don't. Also, it's not comedy. Why does it have to be funny all the bloody way?
So what? It's not entertaining. It's not funny. What is it?
It's a piece of art.
It's not feminist. What a piece of art?
Yeah.
I'm not going to see
it's
art.
It's a Harmony Korine film. You can't. Like I say, it's films. They're just like dreams. You just have to go with it. And if you don't want to, then yeah, I totally get that. You know, a lot of people don't want to go there. They're like, what is all this gibberish? And this is like Gummo as well, but. A lot of people, like, you just get it, and you think there is something there, and I think there is. I don't think he's a charlatan or an idiot. I think he's a really talented filmmaker.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think...
No, sorry, I wasn't saying you'd called him either of those things, but I think he does what he does for a reason, and I don't mean there are any other filmmakers really like him, and I really almost just wish he'd make more films, because thing. And also, I've read like some of the reviews of Spring Breakers have really made my heart sink
because what they
just like the Guardian one. That's it's just totally trying to over intellectualize it and then just put it and go like, oh yeah, so Harmony Korine thinks he's the coolest kid in the world. Well, your film lacked structure, sir. And he's not making it for those people. He's not someone that wants to engage in that fucking bullshit film snobbery. He's just someone that has a unique vision and he wants to show it to you.
I don't think it's film snobbery.
It's fine if people don't like it, but to try and fucking intellectualize, it's like listening to a Ramones song going like, oh, it's so loud and brash, you can hardly even play your guitars. You know, it's like missing the fucking point. It's like that music isn't for you.
I won't deny the craft of the film. It's really well put together.
Looks
it's beautifully
nice,
shot.
Yeah.
But that's what makes my heart sink because I wish there was a better script. I wish I didn't have to spend an hour and a half with these fucking arseholes.
More like 2 hours. God. It felt a lot longer as well, I'll give you that.
Do you think it matters that people, you say a thing, but strip out the context, someone can completely misunderstand you, and that applies to what we say. And then Spring Breakers made me think that.
Well,
you strip the context away of who made it and maybe what it was about. You know what? You know, should that concern you? Should you be concerned if you make an off-color joke or,
Oh, sorry, is that what you were asking me originally?
Sort of, yeah.
Oh, sorry, I completely didn't answer that question.
No, that's all right.
Sorry, I didn't realise that's what you were getting at. That's a really hard question to answer.
Because I don't know, I consider myself a feminist, so if a woman I know says, you make jokes that I find, if I didn't know you, I'd find troubling.
What do you think about, like, Derek and Clive, though?
Fucking love Derek.
So a lot of that is some of the most offensive stuff I've ever heard, specifically about women. And it's just, but
yeah,
I've listened to that in the company of women, and we've all been laughing because you understand that it's not a serious political commentary. It's comedy.
But
I guess it's just us trying to be funny on this podcast. We don't mean to offend anyone.
No, but here's
it's funny because it's so ridiculous to say.
Yeah,
that's what makes it funny.
Being a white middle class man, it's hard to know what being on the receiving end's like. So
that's true.
I don't know what it's ever been like where I've been continually the butt of the joke, except when I was at primary school.
Oh, here we go. 27 minutes 40 seconds. That's how long it took.
So it's hard. I hate the argument. It's like, oh, come on, cheer up, love. It's only a joke. You know,
yeah,
that
banter, mate.
That's the pits banter. To me. Someone who says
this
that.
Podcast is about one thing: banter.
Yeah, that troubles me. So I don't, you know, if I was lumped in with that would be awful.
Sure.
So what am I left with to say? If I, you know, I came out of the film like Harmony Korine gets to make that film. Why can't I say what I like?
Well, you can say what you like.
Yeah, okay.
But I think it's different, I guess, if this is just a podcast where we're having some frank, normal, straightforward discussions, as opposed to if you work it into a piece of art, then it's ambiguous.
There's the thing I forgot. They also told me, the women.
They?
Women.
Yeah.
They said...
careful.
It was palpable that we barely mentioned female directors... or actresses or writers, and if we did...
We mention actresses all the time.
We mention actresses, but yeah, we barely mention... And if we do mention
we talk
actresses...
We talked about Catherine Bigelow quite a lot.
Yeah. And then if we do talk about actresses, we talk about, you know, how they look. I mean, I say...
I don't
attractive.
Do that.
Well, I know, I probably did every now and again. So...
I'm going to say if I think someone's attractive, but I think I've said that about male actors as well.
Yeah.
And I'm not even homosexual.
That's fine.
Aren't I?
Aren't you?
You look like you don't believe me.
Well, your hand is on my thigh.
It's just for warmth.
I think the fact that there's a lack of female directors and, there's less talk of actresses and stuff is a problem with culture and a problem with the system, with Hollywood in particular.
Absolutely.
Where those films don't exist. We can only talk about the canon. I know we try and talk about the canon.
Well, we try.
We don't succeed. And apart from putting a disclaimer at the beginning of every episode, sorry, still no good films by women.
See, that's it. That's an example. That's the I know that's a joke. But, yeah, sorry. Right, so he didn't mean that. I'll say two things there. First of all, I'd like to think that, yeah, while some of the things we say may be misconstrued as like, well, that's, come on, that's not very funny. That's just a bit of sexist. Would be balanced out by the fact that we've, you know, our views, our more serious views, are covered quite in depth when we talk about things.
Yeah.
And hopefully those demonstrate that, you know, we respect women and we don't have biases based on that, especially when it comes to film, which is this is all about. And, oh, we've talked loads about actresses that we love. And the second point I'd make is I agree with you that the lack of successful female directors is Hollywood's fault. It's and all right, we don't just talk about Hollywood films, but there really isn't. And that's why I mentioned Catherine Bigelow, you know. And also The Hunger Games, that was such a big deal because it was like the first Hollywood film with a female lead that had made that kind of money, and so they went like, "Oh, there's Twilight, I suppose."
But yeah, this is all
that was more like
that was both of them. Okay. That was the love story, but yeah, Hunger Games. It was, you know, Katniss Everdeen.
Yeah, and this is partly why Jennifer Lawrence has become this phenomenon, because it's like, oh, she can generate like man money, and the whole thing's really fucked up and sad, and it's like it shouldn't be like that. I totally agree.
But when we watched, let's segue into a bit into Oblivion. We saw Oblivion starring Tom Cruise.
Uh-huh.
The bit where he's in the spaceship with the leading lady, co-leading lady, Olga Kurylenko.
Yeah.
And she's his kind of co-seater. And he gets to fly the plane. He's flying it. He's shooting the guns, and she's just sat there like
she
a fucking lemon.
She literally does nothing.
Yeah, and then although there's one bit where she's quite sort of buttoned up, and then the next scene is she's down to her vest. It's like, oh, hot is it, love? Like what? This is completely. That's why. But she's an excellent actress, and she gets to. She's getting in more and more stuff. One of the few Bond girls to really make it. Mm-hmm. Good enough for Terry Malick. Although I haven't seen her in that, but she's supposed to be good.
Who cares about Malick?
To the Wonder, but yeah. So, you know, that's a real shame. You know that.
Well, hopefully the times they are changing. It happens slowly, but I certainly think, you know, we've talked with great gusto about Britt Ekland and who else? loads of female filmmakers, and we want more.
Britt Ekland's not a female filmmaker.
Sorry, Britt Marling. Britt Marling, I always get those confused.
Yeah,
Britt Ekland's a really bad example to talk about being pro-feminist.
Yeah.
Who talks about...
We have talked loads about Britt Ekland.
Bum, mate.
But that's something else.
Yeah,
that was a joke. Britt Marling, yeah, we dedicated a whole episode.
Exactly.
Ah, oh, yeah.
Because she's made films well worthy of us, you know, she's getting excited about. And it's, yeah... It's it's a big issue. Hot topic.
I got into, again, I was having this argument with feminist correspondent Rebecca. Uh-huh. And I ended up, again, I sort of say things sometimes just for stupid effect.
Uh-huh.
But I said I blamed women for not going to see more films made by women and supporting, you know, women films. And I said I blamed it all on her. And that didn't go down well.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure I'd agree with that.
But when you
I think everyone should just be going to see good films, and people that are capable of making good films should be given the opportunity to make them.
Yeah, we should.
Regardless of gender.
Yeah, men should also.
Or hot boobs.
But what I find, the same way I find it troubling that, say, the women who trade in, and by trading I mean write for glossy fashion magazines that focus on women's weight and how ugly they look on an off day. I have the same problem with women who write the same kind of generic rom-com bullshit where the lead...
Well, and the people that go to see those things and the people that buy those magazines and read them.
But let's... But that's what infuriates me. But like, I'm specifically go, why are women making this shit for, you know, to disseminating these awful messages about you've got to find a man.
Yeah.
30, are you?
I totally agree. Man. It's like we have Nuts magazine and Zoo magazine, but then you also have Heat magazine. And it's like that's men doing damage, and that's women also doing damage. And the thing is absolutely morally reprehensible, and culturally as well. It's appalling.
Yeah,
it's
so
appalling. But people still buy that stuff.
Yeah, so women can belong to the patriarchy just as much as men can. And
that's
I'm a victim of the patriarchy. If I don't act in a certain way, if
that's the thing. We can't talk about that.
We can.
Well, no, women don't get it. I've tried to say this to girls; they don't get it.
But we can't talk about it because it's not film related.
I know. Yeah, there's that too. But well, it ties in. But I don't know. I mean, there is.
Come on, we can. It's fine. We've wrapped up. We've wrapped up feminism. Unless you had something to say.
Well, no, I just I agree with you. I think it's well worth supporting things that you think are good and not feeling like you should go see films like, and I know we've talked about it, but Bridesmaids and Sex and the City that seem like that they're pro female, but actually they're just perpetuating a really, really backwards agenda. And if you actually look at the way that women are treated in those films, it doesn't treat them equally as men. It treats them as subjects of humour. And they might, you know, we might be on their side, but we're still laughing at them. And especially, you know, we can laugh at the fat, ugly women, because fat, ugly women we can laugh at, you know. It's not on. And Sex and the City do the same thing. And I know people say, that was a great step forward for feminism. It isn't, you know. Unequivocally, I don't think it is. I think it's appalling.
Well,
it's morally reprehensible. I don't agree with it. And I know that there are equivalents with male people as well. And I don't go and see those films. Don't give your money to the box office. Go and just see stuff that's made by women and men. And just go if you think it's good. If you really think it's good, tell your friends to go. And that's the way to make the change, I think. And it's great that The Hunger Games made all that money. So, fine. So, all the people who liked it should go and see the next one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Hear, hear, sir.
Right. Sorry if we've caused offence, though.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm not sorry. Me neither.
Right, I've got other... Given that I've delved into listener emails.
Sure.
Let's... For part two of this episode.
Yeah.
This is from Victoria.
Hello!
Hello, Mr. Podcaster and friend. This is not to you, this is to me.
No, I think you'll be a friend. You're not much of a friend.
I have some questions for you that you might find interesting enough to consider for inclusion in your illustrious podcast. So I'll do question one. She's done four questions. The fourth question is, why do you both hate women so much? That's just a little joke.
Oh, you. I'd like to talk about why I hate them so much. They've ripped my heart apart so many times. Go on.
I veer wildly between loving the immersive and often illuminating experience of watching films.
No, you have to say it and so head... the listeners can understand.
Okay. I veer wildly between loving the immersive and often illuminating experience of watching films and hating myself for wasting hours of my life watching other people explore relationships, travel the world, and generally get involved in capers. As men who clearly love cinema, how do you make sure that film enhances your life rather than just eating up your time? Do you ever worry that you are just voyeuristic and are missing out on doing something else? Is it as simple as just making sure you watch quality films that offer new or interesting ideas and perspectives? Or is lowbrow cinema also worthwhile? Yours truly, Victoria.
Right, so that's a two-part question, really.
A two-part.
I will say this. I like your funny voice, but she may feel like you're taking the piss out of her.
I'm not.
Which he's not.
I am
he's
not.
He's just trying to be entertaining. I just wanted to make that clear. She might be crying right now. Interesting. Yeah, good questions. Thanks for getting in contact, Victoria. What do you think?
Do I worry? I hate myself.
Apart from that, you do see a lot more films than I do.
I've always felt that... I mean, I've been watching films since I was a lad, but to the point... I've always felt kind of differently, not in a better way, but I remember watching Trainspotting with my brother and my sister when we would have been about, I don't know, 16 or 17.
Yeah.
And straight away afterwards, I was kind of saying my favourite lines from it that I was just sort of remembered.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother sort of looked at me and was like, how do you remember that bit?
Yeah.
And I just sort of, I was like, just because it did. And And that, yeah, I spent all my time as the cinema ticket
collector.
I would. That's what I wanted to do.
I have the exact same experience. And a lot of it, things like Simpsons quotes as well. Just think like Batman quotes. And people would just give you a really weird... Again, older brother. It's exactly the same. Like, what? You're so weird.
We're going to start...
It's like, I can't help it.
Yeah, we're going to start crying and embracing at the end of this.
God said that it's a divorce.
It's not your fault.
How do you remember it? I can't help it.
Yeah. I've never seen it as a waste of time. It's certainly now a film seems to have fully entered the... I don't know. It's... Everyone talks about films now and going to the cinema. It used... I don't know. Has it changed? I felt a bit more abnormal for the amount of... I talked about it and read about it. And maybe there's just more media and things have changed. And there's obviously Netflix and Love Film and it's easier to consume film.
Yes, definitely.
I mean, I don't ever worry I'm wasting my life. I worry, like, Big Daddy came on the telly, and I've seen that a couple of times, and I was like, I'm going to sit down and watch this again.
Sure. Well, I watched Forrest Gump yesterday.
It's
mad. It's mental.
But I don't see that as a waste of time. I sit there thinking, this Adam Sandler film is yet another example of a man who hates women and gay men, and people love it. And then, then I'll carry on watching it and go, oh, that's funny. A fart joke.
Mm-hmm.
So that's lowbrow. I enjoy lots of lowbrow culture.
Now you're answering the second question.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Go back to the...
I'm following your lead here. Are you trying to fuse the questions as Rebecca? Victoria
did. Are we being just voyeuristic? are we missing out on doing something else?
I don't think it's being voyeuristic. I think that there's a level of going to the cinema that is escapism. But once you have got to the cinema and you're sat down and you have escaped whatever it is you're trying to escape, hopefully you'll eventually see something that you like in that experience, and then that will make you, you know, appreciate film. And I think it's just the kind of thing that the more you do and the more you see different kinds of films, it's like anything else, you just get into it and go, oh yeah, I'm really into film.
Do you remember being changed? Do you remember the last time you felt changed? Or like maybe not, if not the last time, a key moment where you came out and you felt...
About, like, really wanting to see films all the time.
No, change, like, as opposed to you came out of the film and you felt like something had clicked in you with regards to your ideas about life, or, you know.
Well, that happened to some extent with most things that I see.
So, oh, really?
Yeah. You always kind of changed. Well, what, last week, Spring Breakers.
All right, don't use that example.
I felt a bit changed by that.
I don't want to hear why. Because
okay.
I hate that.
No, because it got my mind going. I thought it was,
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
What did it get your mind going on?
Well, you've done that now.
Okay.
No, but it reminded me of, like, oh, look at this person who does their own thing. And yes, probably a lot of people don't get it. And it's difficult and it's unusual. And silliness to it. And so, it's like, oh, that's actually refreshing. You can forget that has a place in the world too. That's just one small example.
More specifically.
Yeah.
A story, a line, an emotion, something that you actually took from the film. Not,
wait, what do you mean?
You were just saying, oh, just that film existing. You came out and you're like, oh, that. I mean, specifically, two characters having a conversation, and you connected with.
Yeah.
With that emotion, you were like, oh, fuck, that's it.
That's what?
That's some whatever it was. I don't,
like, I don't really know what you're asking me.
Well, for example, when I watched Sound of Music.
Yes.
Have you seen The Sound of Music?
Of course, yeah.
The bit where Christopher Plummer comes home.
Yeah.
And he's been a right miserable little sod through the whole film, eh? Yeah, telling his children off, using a whistle to make them do stuff.
he had a lot on his mind, the poor man.
And he comes home and they're singing, and he wells up, and then he looks at Julie Andrews and says, "You brought music back into this house."
Yeah, yes, great, great moment.
Does that, did you, I mean, my dad wasn't even going to the cinema, but yeah. I felt some kind of, you obviously felt something, but then also I felt changed as a result of it. Now, well, that's what I get from,
I think you touched on something I thought of actually there, which is that films, ultimately it's, I think if you're really into films, it's because you like storytelling, you know, that's, it may sound really retarded saying that, but that's what it's about. And I think it's, if you really like to go and see a lot of films, it's because you appreciate the power and value of storytelling. And it's no different than fairy tales or fables, really. They're just more complex ones that cost more money to make. And to me, that's what any film worth its salt is a version of. And again, I always mention Christopher Nolan's Batman films. I think that's, for all their coolness and what they've done for the superhero genre, blah, 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 they're really good mythological tales that, you know, have loads of things that, you know, can pep you up, or just good little quotes that rattle around in your head. And they may be things that one day, like, you might say to one of your kids, and you'll be like, oh, the saying goes, you know, whatever it is. I have to stop the Joker. And they'll be like, where'd you come up with that? And you'll be like, oh, I don't know, it's just the same. But this is how we generate or regenerate ideas in culture, I think, is through storytelling. And now, aside from literature, which is, you know, there are two literature guys somewhere else in London doing a book podcast. We're not them. We're focusing on film. What better, more immediate, powerful medium is there for us to share ideas and tell stories? Because music's something else as well.
Mm. Do you ever worry that maybe you'll just go to the cinema out of habit? I would start kind of worry that maybe I'll just carry on going, like listlessly going, hoping to be changed again, but it not happening because I've changed, I've deadened, and that, those experiences, it's kind of gone. And film would, but you just keep going.
It's not pornography or something. It's, as long as there are good films being made, you'll never be deadened. You'll never be deadened to the experience of going in and seeing a film that really knocks your socks off. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen as often as we'd like. It's like sports fans, I guess, or football fans specifically, you know. I've watched football games, and sometimes you'll see one that is, you totally understand why people love football. So exhilarating and exciting. But most of the time, it's really boring, and even fans will admit that. Kind of fans I know.
Yeah.
But if you keep going, you'll have that experience.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hope so. I was just worried that might happen. And you just sort of keep going, even though you don't believe anymore.
I don't think that ends. And sure, maybe it would be better sometimes to actually get out there and live your life. You come around the danger of just vicariously, pretend vicariously living by seeing films.
Have you ever done something? Have you ever been inspired to do something, live your life better because you saw a film?
Probably.
Ah, good.
Well, I can't really think of an example.
Okay, well.
But that means I have to go back to all the films I've seen in my life. I'm sure we all have, though, at some point or another. And especially it being creative. If you're working on something creative. I mean, I get ideas for music, from films and stuff. Little things, little notions, little things, maybe even visually that you saw, that, oh, that's kind of interesting. And then you work that into something that you're writing, or me and SOTB Joff, and you, we made that little music video, didn't we?
Yeah, we done that.
I'm not going to plug that on here, but we were trying to figure out how to end that, and then when we watched Wreck-It Ralph, you weren't there. You claim you weren't invited.
Wasn't invited.
But there was a little trope that they do in Wreck-It Ralph with him having this, like daydream, and it happens really fast. And we sort of figured out that's the key to making the last bit of that video work. This is so convoluted and it only makes sense to probably me. But that was a great example of, like, even though we're just watching a Disney film, it was really useful to watch in that moment and then have him go, I figured it out, you know, what we saw the other day. And it's like, yeah, and it's like, let's do it like that. And it's like, what a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
Yeah. So I think it has that goodness.
So yeah, offer. And it doesn't matter if you watch quality or low, like some, or lowbrow. Like some people genuinely don't have enough time. They've got time to, you know, I don't know, watch one film a week if that. So on that basis,
oh right, I watch them at home.
Yeah,
sorry, I thought you meant the cinema.
Just generally, yeah. On that basis, is it important for them to watch just good stuff, i.e., stuff I say, or can they watch whatever they like?
I like to think most people innately crave good stuff, and that even someone who may not have, you know, been to art school as I have, or studied literature as you have.
I haven't studied literature. I studied politics.
Be proud of it.
I did English at A level. That doesn't count.
No, that counts. Fucking A, that counts.
Fucking
sorry for the language.
What
I'm saying is anyone, even someone who's not from like a sort of fucking culture obsessed middle class background like we are, I still think if they watch films, they're gonna see one at some point that they really like and go like, yes, I want to see more films like that rather than just crap ones. I think that's fairly universal because, like I say, everyone appreciates storytelling, and a good story is better than a shit story or non-story. Except in the case of Spring Breakers.
Yeah. And yet, Skyfall was the most popular film.
Yeah,
both critically and commercially.
But then that's entertaining, well, meant to be entertaining.
The story doesn't make any sense.
So it's more like a fairground ride on that level. Some people, I think, like to go and see those things just to be like, ooh, he's fallen down the thing. Ooh, he's got shot. Oh, he's all right. He's back up again and he's shot, of course. There's that, but anyway, the point is, it depends what you mean by lowbrow, because I do, you know, we went to see Oblivion last week. I mean, it wasn't very good, but
it's not lowbrow.
I'm all for going to see films like that once in a while.
Oblivion's it's not good fun. Lowbrow. I think she probably means Adam Sandler movies,
or like, you know, those really bad like comedies that you see advertised on the side of buses, like rom-coms.
Yeah,
that's and it's just brow. Whoever's been in a more successful comedy with someone else. You know, and they just whack like Ryan Reynolds and Jennifer Aniston star in I Can't Stand You. To me, that's lowbrow. And I have seen some of those films.
Ian Kant on TV and Tabitha Stand.
It's an eating. It's like, I haven't seen that one.
They meet in circumstances and they say, I can't stand you.
Yes.
That's my pitch for that movie.
One of them gets hit by a car. Literally can't stand. It's not funny. Don't laugh.
And the person tries to prop him up, and she goes, "I can't stand you."
Yes. Right, Hollywood, if you're listening, outofthecanon.tumblr.com. That kind of lowbrow. I will be a Nazi there and say, "Don't you dare go and see that kind of crap. Not do it. Don't give them the money."
But some people think Ace Ventura is lowbrow, and we watched that the other day, and we loved it.
There's Ace Ventura has redeeming qualities. Like they put effort, and the same with like the Naked Gun films as well, which Ace Ventura kind of took from. They put a lot of love into those films, and I just think people can tell the difference. You know, when you're sat in the cinema watching the biggest pile of crap like Sex and the City 2 or something, you know in your heart that that's just a ridiculous con, and it's pathetic. It's like any society in this day and age should be shameful to go and see those things. You should be ashamed if you go and see that. And you might justify it and say, yes, it's just a bit of fun. But you know the difference between that and then just seeing something that's light-hearted fun, but that's been well done, and like the people that made it were really into it. And we know for a fact that those Sex and the City films were a good example, because they weren't into it, and all those actresses fucking hate each other.
It's a good thing.
You know the difference in your heart. That's between you and God, my friend.
What about the cinema experience changes the film for you? This is another question from Victoria. How does the setting and the mood of the location change the experience? Is there anything to be said about the group experience of cinema screenings versus the solitary viewing? How do you both feel about the rise of online streaming services and the improvements in technology that mean you can watch a film on the tube wearing headphones?
Well, Victoria, you sound uncannily like deceased actor Richard Harris. again, another good question. Absolutely, I mean, yeah, right?
Oh yeah,
seeing a film in a crowd, in the right crowd, makes all the difference sometimes. And after that, we mentioned The Hangover before. Just I guess that connects to what I was saying before.
You see that in the cinema
first on my own, just thought I'll go and see something silly. Laser. No, but it was, everyone was just laughing out loud, not in an over the top way. And it was just, I felt like I was in a room full of people that were just really cracking up over stuff that was silly, but well done silly. Yeah. And I reckon I wouldn't have the love that I have for that film if I hadn't initially seen it in that setting.
That's I felt the same way about The Dictator. It's very, it was kind of lowbrow. I got the last going in that.
No, it's a nice feeling though, isn't it? Yeah. When you're laughing with a bunch of strangers in the room. I'll give you that.
I always struggled going to the cinema in a group when I was younger because I always felt that I was the one who was going to suggest, if I suggested the film, I felt responsible about whether or not everyone liked it. And just that anxiety made it hard for me to enjoy the film. Uh-huh. And then if I came out and everyone didn't like it, I just assumed that they'd hate me. I mean, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, that seems unfair on yourself there.
I know. I mean, I think I've got over that now. But that made it hard. So, I mean, I do really like the solo experience, just going on your own. There's something to be said for that, but not a lot of people do that.
I love to go to the cinema on my own, actually.
What would you rather?
I've never really been one to go with a big group of friends. I like to go with maybe one friend. Like I've
me.
When you and me go to the cinema, that's cool. But
Jeff said me.
My girlfriend. Nice thing to do too.
Bring her up.
But nice. I've never been a fan of sort of group trips to the cinema or anything like that. I think it's like if you want to see your friends, then you don't want to be stuck in the cinema. You want to kind of be in a pub.
And yet people talk to their friends in the cinema, don't they, during the film?
They do.
Oh, what's he from? Oh, I recognise him from that thing. Oh, what's going on? Jim, I can't tell what's... who's he? Huh? Oh, this reminds me of that time we had in Ibiza.
Well, indeed. As a fan of sci-fi and like superhero films and stuff, there's also something when you go and see those things and you know that it's you and the fans, especially if you go like opening weekend. And that's really, really nice feeling. And you get the audience, they're more kind of respectful of these kind of big budget films. And if you go and see them a few weeks later with just an any audience, where you have people sort of scoffing at the really ridiculous things about the film laughing at things that you don't think were funny.
There's a really good good vibe at the Avengers screening.
And like people are just there to have fun and they're just hopeful that this thing I love is going to be represented in film and the Star Wars prequels and stuff, unfortunately, but you knew that the people there were excited about what they were going to see and they'd gone.
I enjoyed going to see The Phantom Menace. I remember enjoying it because I went to see it early, first screening, and everyone was up for it.
And I think that's a really nice sign of film fandom, although that's obviously the more geeky side that perhaps won't appeal to someone as regal sounding as Victoria. And as female sounding as Victoria. It sounds female.
Have a female listener. I've got a theory so it means now I don't go to the cinema on a Friday or a Saturday night.
Uh-huh.
And my theory is that people who go to the cinema on a Friday or a Saturday night, they just want a night out. It doesn't matter what they do. The film's almost fucking backdrop to it, literally. Front drop. Sorry.
That
sounded really funny in my head.
Right. Sure.
Your withering stare.
I'm laughing at your
nonsense. No, forget it. I think you're more likely to get people who were, they'd be disinterested. It's
not a night out, though, is it?
People treat it like a night out. That's on a Friday and a Saturday night. Oh, what should we do? Let's go to the cinema.
In London, where we live?
Yeah.
Losers. That's not a night out. Do that in a week. Go on a night out.
Look, I'm
or
just...
Or go to a like, these are my late findings. Night cool screen.
These are my findings of, the kind of crowds you get.
Are you talking like when the Prince Charles Cinema does Breakfast Club screenings at 12:30
a.m.? I'm talking about going to the Hackney Picture House. And on a Friday and a Saturday night, you get a different breed of cunt.
It's a night out, though. That's a night in to me.
That's you and me, but everyone else is treating it like a bit of fun. You're like, no, this is serious.
Well, no, I think it is fun. It just depends on whether you're engaging with the film or anything. I mean, I remember being sat next to this Italian couple in the IMAX when I was seeing Mission Impossible 4. And every 30 seconds, the girl next to me just kept sighing, going, yeah, right. Yeah, right. At everything that happened. And it's like, sorry, what do you think you're seeing? And that was annoying, because it's like, you didn't come here going, this isn't as good as the... This isn't as good as the previous Mission Impossible films.
She probably hasn't even seen them.
Yeah, she's obviously like, just wandered into the IMAX. Like, maybe she was a tourist or something. Like,
she probably was down that way.
But then to go in and complain about what you're seeing, it's like, what?
Well, that's the thing. They've gone just to see the big screen. The film on it is irrelevant. And it's like, oh, yeah, right. It's like, fuck you, man. I love this shit. Yeah.
Tom, but then, like I say, when it's people that have gone for a reason, they're fans of it, then that's cool. That's cool if they go on a Friday night. As long as they're into it.
No, but I'm saying... No, that's fine, but I'm saying because people are going there for a night out, you can't go there if you love the film because they ruin it with their fucking muttering and their popcorn and their voices.
Oh, sorry, right. You're talking groups of friends. I did at the start of the podcast.
Yeah. I'm specifically saying worst night, worst times for that are Friday night, Saturday night. And it's just like, fuck you. This is not a night out.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I'm with you there. And much as we love our local cinema, the Hackney Picture House, that is a bit of a hazard there. You see these, every time I go and see anything, there's like a group of eight people wearing like brand new Abercrombie and Fitch clothes. And they're all shouting, come on, come on, have you got the tickets? And it's like, I'm sorry,
is it
guys.
The same group?
That is, yeah, maybe. I don't know. I understand you want to go to the cinema, but why do you all have to do it as a group? Why can't it just be like, I'm going to go and see a film that I like to see? And then maybe your mate Kev goes,
such a miserable cunt.
So is that not what people want?
No.
All right.
But you always go on the cheap night on Monday. Not calling you cheap, but...
Or Wednesday, yeah, that's true.
And that's where, again, you're getting people who are going there and they're going, well, yeah, it's cheap, I'll go, whatever it is. Or it's
but I just still think it's weird that they make it a cool thing. Oh, let's all dress up. You see people dressed up to go to the cinema. What are you doing? They're like, yeah, I'll come to the cinema. That's going to be really cool. And it's like, it'd be cooler if you went to a bar. Like,
be cool if you shut your mouth during the fucking trailers.
Yeah, I think that's the reason I'm angry. I don't care what people wear. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I don't mean that. But yeah, anyway, if you're interested in film, don't go and see it on a Friday or a Saturday night.
No, don't. I mean, you should.
Respectful
of the audience.
That's Victoria's question. She there was another one, but why are there no more funny films made? But we've covered that.
We've done that. We figured that out. Seth Rogen's fault.
Yeah.
He got thin and everything stopped being funny.
And then signs off. Thank you. I love you both very much. Keep up the good work and be nice to cats. Callback.
Oh, to what?
Be nice to cats when I sort of laughed at you for
thinking
cats had personalities.
Well,
I guess
thank you, Victoria. We love you too. As we love all our fans and all the ones that take time to bother actually contacting us.
Yeah.
/ actually listening to us.
Imagine that.
Really appreciate that,
if you tweeted us a load of questions, you could have a whole episode dedicated to you.
F yeah.
Ooh.
Damn right. No, we can. And I hope we haven't caused any offence to people. We don't mean any offence, but, you know, we just think it's funny to act like dicks sometimes.
But let's pretend. Yeah, it's all pretend.
Yeah.
But let's remember, sometimes I say the wrong thing, and this is actually being recorded for posterity.
Oh, no.
It's fine if I say the wrong thing.
I've tried to tell you this from the beginning. If you go back and listen to some of the early episodes, I'm in there saying people are going to be really annoyed that you just said that. And you're cackling, going, shut the fuck up. No, they're not. I'm kind of, again, because I know you, I don't see any of that. So I don't think you ever are being offensive. It's only when you make me, when you draw attention to it, I'm like, oh yeah, that does sound a bit sketchy.
Mm.
But that's why this podcast is so groundbreaking and brilliant and addictive.
It was kind of like, think something I said in episode 2, I might not think now, the whole thing,
I've said that before too.
Yeah.
The views, they change. There's loads of stuff I've probably said that's like, I don't even think that.
How much you loved Unbreakable, for example.
Oh, yes. Well done for bringing it up.
Cast your minds back, listeners. A couple of episodes ago, a young Jeffrey Glees says, oh, Unbreakable, I love that film. It's so good. It's so grown up and clever. A couple of weeks later.
I don't think I said that.
I don't know.
I was like, that's... M. Night Shyamalan's only good film, and I watched it last week. I was like, yeah, oh, I'll watch it again. It's not a good film. And it reminded me that he has no good films. So, sorry, Minaj, if you're listening, but must try harder. So, yeah, perfect example.
Yeah, but yeah. We're happy
future
to...
Jeff knows better.
We're happy to accept these things and internalise
Call
them.
Us up on it. Please, keep tweeting us, at Out of the Canon, C-A-N-O-N. And out of the canon.tumblr.com. Get in touch. Rag on us.
Yeah.
Start a debate going. Yeah. We've ultimately got the power. We can shoot you down.
I can read your thing out in a funny voice.
Yeah.
Not so funny, but... Well,
can I read one out sometime as well?
Oh, do you know what? You get to read the next one out.
Yes! All right, whoever that is, I'll be mucho respeto.
You better do it in the voice of Ian McKellen.
No, we can't go down that route.
Oh, please.
That's what they say. Anyway,
all right, we'll wrap this episode up then.
Yeah, that'll do us.
It's a good little mishmash of
nice one. Little chat.
Yeah,
yeah, not too much shouting at each other as well.
Yeah, I thought that would go worse, but that's good. All right, thanks for listening.
See
I
you
have
next
been
time. What
you have been.
I'm Jeff Glees.
And I've been Adam Richmond.
See you next time. Bye.